And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Wednesday, November 15th, 2017, middle of the week, middle of the month. And we have got a lot of stuff to talk about today here. Our phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, twiddling the dials, keeping us out of trouble, and ready to answer the phone when you call on in. A reminder that today in our third hour, we're going to have Hal Shurtleff. He is the founder and operates Camp Constitution, which is a yearly get-together for young people to learn about the Constitution. We're going to be talking about Agenda 21 and Common Core and the Constitution and all this other really good stuff. So that's going to be an hour number three. Tomorrow we're going to have Alan Parks, who cured his own cancer with cannabis oil. And, of course, Friday, the lovely Lady Claire will be joining us back on the airwaves with her unique perspective on the world. So let's get on into it. A lot of fallout still happening from Jeff Sessions' testimony before the House Judiciary Committee, and a lot of it has to do with his flip-flopping on statements he made before under oath, and now has changed them again under oath, and he insists he's not lying, just has a really, really bad memory, which I think would be reason for him to step down. You know, even going all the way back to the Watergate hearings, you know, I don't remember. I have no idea. I have no recollection of that. I'm sorry. You know, my brain is just faulty here. And one of them, of course, has to do with Sessions' meeting with Papadopoulos that he denied had ever happened. And then it turned out it did happen. Another thing that a lot of people are really kind of wondering about is Sessions defended Loretta Lynch's use of a pseudonym on official emails, her government email account, where she was sending out emails that were signed with a fake name. And Sessions basically said that he does the same thing, so it's no big deal. We all do it, and there's nothing really nefarious about it. Well, if it's official mail, why aren't you using your official name on it? And so it's basically this whole idea about we're just going to do what we're going to do, and because we're all doing it, it's okay. But more and more people are saying it is time for Sessions to go, because it is becoming obvious to everybody that Sessions' Department of Justice launched the Mueller investigation into Donald Trump, where there was no evidence that any crimes had taken place, but is still delaying, blocking a Uranium One probe where there's paperwork all over the place saying this stuff happened. And so all this talk about Russia collusion, Mueller hasn't found anything yet, just a lot of rumor and innuendo. The real collusion was between Hillary Clinton and Russia in this Uranium One deal. And Sessions is still out there saying, well, there's not enough evidence. Well, you had zero evidence to go after Trump, Mr. Sessions. Didn't stop you there, did you? So a lot of people are really getting very upset about this. Little flashback here. Remember during the FBI probe into Hillary Clinton's email server, five of her aides received immunity deals. Now, if nobody's done anything wrong, there's no need for an immunity deal. So we know something is there, and we know the FBI has the evidence on it, or they wouldn't have had to strike immunity deals. And still Sessions is saying, nope, we're not going to go look there. Nope. Nothing to see here, people. Move along. And article coming out of the Gateway Pundit is asking, are the delays in prosecuting Mueller, Hillary, and Podesta by Attorney General Sessions the greatest legal travesty in U.S. history? And I think probably I would say yes. Because it's very obvious that the Attorney General and the FBI, the second in a row for both, are protecting Hillary Clinton, which is to say they're protecting the narcocracy. They're protecting a scandal that is so horrific it would, in fact, be the end of the U.S. government were it to come on out fully. All right, let's see. We're going to take a phone call. Dustin in New Jersey, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, Mike, I just watched Trump's press conference, and he yes. said America's back. Does anybody believe it? I think he left off up against the wall.
Well, I was watching it, too. I mean, there was a big run-up. He's going to make this huge announcement and everything. And basically, I think he's trying to basically cover the fact that he came back from his Asia trip without a whole heck of a lot. And so he's up there making a speech to make it sound like he laid down the law that there will be, you know, sea lane right of way and airline right of way and all the, which was already there before his trip. So it looks like Trump knows that he kind of struck out over there in Asia, and he's trying to convince the American people that he's accomplished something. But I don't think he really did. And I don't think people are going to buy it from this speech.
Hey, Mike, I got a stupid thing on TPP. Do you think, I didn't agree with it, but do you think this is what they needed to prop up this global Ponzi scheme, is the TPP, to continue the scam without it? You know, we got nothing to offer, Mike. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
You're exactly right. When they were doing the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, it appeared to be an attempt to literally lock the world's economy where it is right now before it deteriorated any further for the United States. And now that Trump has pulled out of the TPP, the other nations that were looking at that trade agreement are going back in, and they're re-engineering it to basically serve their own nation's best interest. And I'll tell you one thing I'm pretty sure is going to go is that demand that there be no labeling of GMO foods or even allow non-GMO to be labeled. I think that one's going to go because many of those countries are already banning GMO or they mandate GMO labeling like Japan. So I think that's probably going to go.
Yeah, people don't realize China's got a 7% GDP. I mean, their growth is 7% every year. We had one quarter that was 3%, but that's from the federal government, so take that with a grain of salt. Probably more like 1%. There's no way we're back and we're ever going to be back. We're not growing. We're declining. I mean,
yeah, we are. There's no question about it. We're not back. We're a long way away from being back. It took decades to take the United States as it was at its peak and bring it to where it is right now. And it's not going to go back overnight. It'll take decades to rebuild the United States to where it's great again. And personally, I don't think we're going to get there because I don't think this economy or this federal government are going to last much longer.
And, Mike, I just watched the Wall Street Journal with that Gary Cohn. That's Trump's, his Treasury Secretary?
Yes.
Or his fund. He asked, like, they asked the question to the audience, how many, like, with the corporate tax rate, you know, going from, 35 to 20, how many people are going to invest, you know. And only two people or three out of the whole audience raised their hand. The corporate tax plan is not going to help the consumers, which is the middle class we consume the most. It's going to help them, the people who wrote the tax plan. It's not bringing jobs back. They're going to take and then rebuy their stocks. They're going to up the stock market, the scam stock market, by up buying their stocks back like they've been doing all along. So anybody thinks this corporate tax plan is going to bring American jobs back has a screw loose, because trickle-down economics and all this other crap don't work. The only thing that's trickling down, Mike, is little breadcrumbs here and there from their French fancy bread they've been eating. I mean, how much more? I mean, I'm so aggravated.
Well, I hear you, and I hear it in a lot of the phone calls, and I see it in a lot of the emails I get. People who are reaching that breaking point. And it's turning into a very, very dangerous situation here. But you're absolutely right. The reason this country will never be great again is because while our politicians are talking about making America great, nobody is making the decisions that would reverse the disastrous decline into economic fascism that we have been on these last several decades, because it's doing well for them. They're going to go on voting their own wallets, voting themselves richer at the expense of everybody else until the system collapses. We're in the final years of the United States of America, if not the final months.
Mike, a lot of people don't know this, but out of the $1.2 trillion for the tax cut plan, $900 billion goes to the corporate tax cut. $900 billion, which the rest goes to, you know, family or whatever, you know, two-kid things to try to prop up more serfs to do low-wage jobs or something. You know, got to produce more people, you know, kids. You know, maybe they're not bringing enough refugees in, you know. But, I mean, yeah, $900 billion of the $1.2 goes to the corporate cut, which they're going to buy their own stock back. So they're not investing here. Apple has they're worth like a quadrillion-dollar company. They got hundreds of billions of dollars, Mike, sitting in cash offshore. They don't pay taxes. And if they have all this money sitting offshore, Why aren't they bringing it back, investing already in Americans? Because they're not gonna. I hate to tell this to people. Trump chumped us. Thanks, Mike.
Well, Trump didn't create this mess. It was created for him. Let's be fair about that. The problem that we have here right now is that companies are very reluctant to be investing in manufacturing here in the United States of America, precisely because they know the consumer class doesn't have money to buy the products. And so their rationale is they're going to build the factories in the countries where there are consumers who will buy those products, both because it's going to be lower cost to manufacture in those countries, and it'll be cheaper shipping the product from the factory to the stores. It's going to be a much shorter distance. So the U.S. is basically it's dried up. It's used up. And reviving it would just take a tremendous effort. And nobody seems to want to make a commitment to that. You're absolutely right. This this tax bill, again, it's raising taxes on the middle class. It's cutting taxes on the ultra wealthy. It's cutting taxes on corporations. The end result is our national debt is going to go up even faster than it did before. And our consumer economy is going to be even worse because most consumers are from that middle class and they're already running out of money. So that's the problem that we have there. All right, we're going to do a shout-out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Everybody's, like, going crazy over this whole sexual accusation, and it has spun completely out of control. And decent people are having their lives ruined with groundless accusations. And we're literally seeing a return to Code Napoleon. If you're accused of sexual misconduct, the burden is on you to prove that it didn't happen, that you're innocent. Otherwise, it's already over. Even though none of these women who have accused Judge Roy Moore are able to document that anything actually happened, they're treating him like he's guilty. And they're saying it's up to him to prove that it didn't happen. Now, interestingly enough, there was a story that came on out from Stillness in the Storm where dozens of Capitol Hill staffers are saying that sexual misconduct by lawmakers is epidemic. And in fact, it is so bad that female staffers are literally being warned not to get into the elevators alone with certain politicians. CNN published a report that more than 50 people who worked on Capitol Hill paint a consistent picture of rampant sexual harassment and misconduct at all the hands of the political elite. So this is something that's been going on all the time. It's just being fanned up now as a political weapon to be used against conservatives. Now, story coming out of Breitbart is saying that Arianna Huffington had a problem with sexual misconduct over at Huffington Post, and she turned a blind eye to it rather than cause an upset that might harm her blog, its public image, and its revenues. And, of course, the problem I have with all of this sex scandal stuff that they're using, it's being used to distract us away from Uranium One. It's being used to distract us away from rigging the primary. It's being used to distract us away from the dossier, the dodgy dossier. And because, unfortunately, sex works. Remember when Bill Clinton was under investigation for the Whitewater and all the rest of that? And we all got distracted with Monica Lewinsky and Hummers in the Oval Office and the stained blue dress. And everybody's attention was lured away with that. Remember Conditization? Gary Condit, was he having an affair with his squeeze? Did he kill her? And that was being used to distract us away from the fact that the United States government was already telling other countries in early 2001 that the U.S. was going to go to war in Afghanistan. And every other country on earth knew it. It was a total surprise to us when 9/11 happened. So unfortunately, along with attacking political enemies, I think all of this sexual allegation stuff is being used by the corporate media to try and distract us all from the real scandals. Your Uranium One scandal, the rigging of last year's primary and attempted rigging of the general election, and of course that bogus dossier and who paid for it and whether certain figures within the corporate media were in fact paid to promote this story. That's where we need to keep our attention. Now, BuzzFeed has managed to put their foot into it yet again. Basically, they discovered that there was a transfer of funds to Russian embassies here in the United States of America, accompanied by memos saying the funds were to finance the election campaign of 2016. And BuzzFeed went on out with this, and the corporate media picked it up. Here we've got the proof that Russia was interfering with our 2016 elections. The only problem is the Russian Duma election was also held last year. And Russia was sending money to the embassies to set up voting booths for Russian expatriates who are still citizens of Russia but live in this country so that they could vote in the Russian election. And that is how careless and reckless corporate media is in their desire to just demonize Russia and take us back to the heyday of McCarthyism, you know, and there's a commie under everybody's bed. Story coming out of Russia today is talking about the issue. Were U.S. journalists paid to peddle Russiagate? And apparently Representative Devin Nunes, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has signed a subpoena to seize the financial records of Fusion GPS. And he wants to get those records all the way down to the final recipients of the money. And basically saying that the way they were handling the funds to pay for the dossier and possibly pay reporters to carry the stories amounts to money laundering. Now, as you know, we are coming up on the Winter Olympics early next year in South Korea. And a lot of people are very nervous about the tensions on the Korean Peninsula. It's a little too late, unfortunately, to change the venue. They've already built everything up, and it's there. But the big issue is, will Russia be allowed to participate in the Winter Olympics because of the doping scandals that supposedly erupted during the last Olympics? Now, of course, Russia is denying that there was any doping going on. And now they're suggesting that this whole doping scandal may have been orchestrated by the CIA in order to keep the Russian athletes out of the games. So the U.S. can go in and get the gold, so forth and so on here. All right, we're going to take a phone call here. Fran in Washington, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, nui nui, Michael. Hey, speaking of Russia, I can no longer download and install Yandex.
Okay.
I think I'm being censored.
Well, I would imagine that probably as people try and abandon Facebook and Google and YouTube and the rest of it, that there are going to be efforts to try and block these new startup companies, these new browsers, so that people can't have an alternative. You're not allowed to have a choice. You will use Facebook with its censorship. You will use Google with its censorship. You will use YouTube with its censorship. Okay? And that may be what's going on. Now, after the show, I'll try and see if I can download it myself. It may just be a local block in your area. But we're seeing more and more overt attempts to basically censor what the American people are able to see and get, and to basically block us from having any alternative means of getting out to the world and seeing what's going on.
Precisely. Anyway, I thought maybe your readers and listeners would like to know that.
Okay, well, like I said, after the show, I'll do a verification on that, and we'll come back tomorrow and report on whether we're able to do that. At this point, I feel like they've pushed the panic button there in Washington, D.C. and in the corporate media offices, because the fake news thing isn't working out. The forcing Russia Today to register as a foreign agent under this 1938 law has not harmed their reputation any, and I think we're already past the watershed moment where no matter what the government does, it just makes it look worse in the eyes of the American people in terms of dictatorial control of the flow of information. And so, again, in the age of the Internet, government lies don't last. All right. Thanks a lot, Fran. We'll let you go. Now, over in Russia, Sergey Lavrov is basically saying that governments are using Russia hysterics to distract voters from their own domestic problems. Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. Anything doesn't work out, it's all Russia's fault. We've been seeing that with Theresa May. She's becoming very unpopular. There's even talk that her coalition government may fall apart. And what is she out there doing? Oh, it's Russia. Russia is sowing discord. Anybody who doesn't love me and my government, they're obviously a Russian stooge. And I mean, it's getting to the point of abject silliness. Russia's to blame for everything. Oh my goodness, we had horrible rain all over the place last night. That must have been Russia. It's got to be Russia. It really is ridiculous. Now let's get on to this whole thing that's going on over in Alabama and Judge Roy Moore. As of today, the Republican National Committee has cut off all funds for his campaign. And a lot of people are saying, what are you guys doing? You're basically handing Alabama that Senate seat to a Democrat. And why are you doing that? Especially when you consider that, again, none of these allegations have been proven. It's a smear job. Now, inside Alabama itself, their state GOP party is basically threatening retaliation for anybody who deserts Roy Moore, saying that they have to remain united, and anybody who speaks out against Roy Moore will be kicked off the ballot in future elections. So this is turning into a real fight. Now, here is an interesting bit of information. CNN published a photo of the signature in the yearbook of one of the victims as proof that, yes, she had known Roy Moore. Well, a signature in a yearbook doesn't prove sexual assault. The fact that they may have known each other doesn't prove anything. But here's where it gets interesting. The inscription in the yearbook says, "To a sweeter, more beautiful girl I could not say, Merry Christmas, love, Roy Moore, D.A., 122-77 Old Hickory House." Okay? Here's the interesting thing. Everything up to the first name Roy is written in black ink. You can see it in the CNN photo. Everything after that, Moore, D.A., 122-77 Old Hickory House, is written in blue ink. So what it looks like happened is somebody found an inscription in the yearbook signed by somebody named Roy, and they added Moore to it, not realizing they were writing in a different colored pen. And that makes it very obvious the whole thing is a fraud, because let's face it, when you're writing, you know, in a book, you don't change pens halfway through. I mean, there's no indication the black pen was running out of ink. So it's a setup. And it gets even worse than that. Story that's coming out of San Diego Union Tribune. Apparently, a pastor in Alabama reported that he received a robocall from someone claiming to be a Washington Post reporter offering up to $7,000 to make damaging remarks about the Republican candidate. This is a report coming out of Mobile, Alabama TV station WKRG. And the message was left on the voicemail of this pastor from Creola, Alabama. And the TV station ran the audio of the robocall. And the message went along like this. "Hi, this is Bernie Bernstein. I'm a reporter from the Washington Post calling to find out if anyone at this address is a female between the ages of 54 to 57 years old willing to make damaging remarks about candidate Roy Moore for a reward of between $5,000 and $7,000. We will not be fully investigating these claims. However, we will make a written report. I can be reached by email, blah, 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 blah." And the email address left is at the Washington Post. So they're literally out there trying to harvest any women who will say bad things about Roy Moore. And they're offering bribes. I mean, that it doesn't get more obvious than that. The national GOP is saying that they will ignore the election in Alabama if Moore wins. Why do they hate Moore so much? Why are they willing to literally give a Senate seat to a Democrat to get rid of this guy? Because he's not part of the narcocracy? He's another outsider? Maybe. Well, during this break, I did succeed in downloading and installing the Yandex browser, so I don't know what issues our caller was having with it. But it's obviously available, and people can still take advantage of it. Chrome is really angering me because they make a lot of decisions on your behalf. If you're constantly updating your page and you put the code at the page saying force a page refresh, Chrome just ignores it. You have to literally go into developer mode to be able to refresh the page. Firefox is big and clunky. They're coming out with a new one that's going to break most of the extensions. Isn't it kind of a sad commentary on the state of our computer hardware and software, that they'll have something that works really well, but they have to update it, they have to improve it, they have to force us to buy new and better things at more money. And as a result, our technology has become very decadent. We'll talk about that more later in the show here. Getting on back to Roy Moore, Rush Limbaugh had an interesting comment about that. Rush's opinion is the attack on Roy Moore is coming from Mitch McConnell as a message to Steve Bannon, and that might be part of what's going on. But I think the ferocity with which they want to get Moore out, I can understand coming from the Democrats. They want that Senate seat. They want to take control of Congress so that they can impeach Donald Trump. But why so many Republicans are stepping on in, including John McCain, suggests that the problem is that Moore is not really one of the insiders. He's not part of the narcocracy. And they see having more of these non-narcocracy politicians as a growing threat going along with a president who's not part of the narcocracy. We're going to take a phone call here. Francis in North Carolina. Aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, aloha, Michael.
Aloha, aloha.
To you both. Snack bar and everything, what can I tell you? Two quick things. One, as far as Roy Moore situation goes, it sounds like another little shenanigan type distract or whatever from who knows what's going on, right, mixed with everything else has been used as a distract, information, whatever have you, blah, 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 one hand distracts from another scenario. But that's not the main thing I was calling about. I've got a big bone to pick. I am so perturbed, okay. It's not even silly. One, since the so-called EPA is so efficient, so effective, and so far part of the federal government's entourage and so forth, they really need to get in touch with and reprogram what type of fuel is being used in the aircraft that are flying in the skies. In case you're wondering why I say that, it's because I don't care how many feet in distance in the atmosphere the aircraft is flying and so forth ad nauseum, but they really need to check the formula for the fuel that they're using, that they're creating these obscene, disgusting contrails, as they're called, that are like going from a simple streak in the air to a blurred, whop it this way. Take a piece of charcoal. You put it on a piece of paper and take your finger and rub over the charcoal, and it just creates a blurred streak in the process. That type
Okay,
of
well, let me cut in on here right now, because it's a misconception that the contrails are coming out of the engine from the fuel. The fuel used in modern aircraft is JP1 kerosene, which is used for safety because it will not explode. It has to be properly mixed with air before it'll burn at all, and it's actually very safe fuel. But what it does produce in its exhaust is a large amount of water vapor, and when the air outside the aircraft is very cold, that water vapor will immediately condense to form clouds. When you're seeing a contrail, you're just seeing a long, skinny cloud. It's exactly the same stuff. It's water vapor.
Well, you can say it's a long, skinny cloud, but believe me, sometime after that, it becomes so distorted, it's not even silly. And it's like, it really gets really gross and disgusting. That's the reason why I said, regardless of what type of specialized kerosene it is, they need to recheck the formulation of that thing, because it is just nasty.
Well, so, the problem is, anytime you're going to have a hot exhaust of an aircraft that's got any water vapor in it, it's going to produce contrails. And even back in the days of piston engine aircraft, which were burning gasoline, there was enough water vapor there where they would leave trails behind them. You're not going to get away from it when you're flying at that altitude. When you're flying at a lower altitude, jet planes don't leave those kind of you never see those contrails, you know, at the airport itself. It's only when they achieve that high altitude. And again, it's just water vapor. So thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go here and get on back to the war zones. There's a lot of stuff going on around the world. Over in Zimbabwe, President Mugabe has been deposed. There are tanks all over the capital right now. The Zimbabwean military has taken over control of the country. They're saying it's not a coup, but it walks like a coo and it quacks like a coo and it sounds like a coo. They took over the state broadcaster ZBC headquarters, and they're assuring everybody that Mugabe is safe. But what they have done is they took the vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, that was fired by Mugabe, and they've made him the interim president. And so, yeah, it is a coup d'etat. And Europe and the U.S. are already sending envoys to make deals, you know, with the new government of Zimbabwe, because there's a lot of stuff there people want. Zimbabwe has coal, chromium ore, asbestos, gold, nickel, copper, iron, vanadium, lithium, tin, and the platinum group metals. The main products that Zimbabwe exports includes precious stones, precious metals, tobacco, and these various mineral ores. So there's a rich treasure there for whoever can get on in and make a deal with the new government. But yeah, it is a coup d'etat. Now the question is, this vice president and this head of the army, are they in fact part of an organized regime change on behalf of the United States of America? Because that's the whole reason AFRICOM is there. All across Africa is to bring those African nations under the control of the U.S. economic system, to deny those resources to Russia and China. That's why Africa is going to be a big, ugly battleground in this coming war. Now, over in Syria, the Syrian army has managed to turn the militants back in northern Hama. There was a counterattack. It's pretty much failed. And part of that may have been the result. Six Russian long-range bombers, those Tu-22s, and they're actually very pretty aircraft. I know they're there to do bad things, but they're actually very pretty aircraft. But they carried out long-range airstrikes targeting ISIS terrorist positions in an area located close to the recently liberated Syrian city of Abu Kamal in the southeast of the country. And the strikes destroyed Islamic State hideouts and military equipment in the area. And the bombers took off from an airfield in Russia and flew over Iran and Iraq to carry out the strikes. So those planes have got legs here. Now, Syrian representative at the UN, Bashar Jafari, while speaking to the General Assembly in New York, stated that Saudi Arabia and its allies have collapsed in Syria due to the heroism and steadfastness of the Syrian nation. And Jafari also marked that the draft resolution, which was proposed by the United States, contained fabricated information and data about the current situation in Syria. Oh, my stars and garters. You mean the U.S. government's been caught lying again? It's amazing here. Now, interestingly enough, remember the Syrian Defense Force? Even though they were Kurdish, they called themselves the Syrian Democratic Forces, rather. And they had a spokesperson, Talal Silo, who defected into territory in Syria held by the Turkish military and basically made an announcement that the Syrian Democratic Forces will probably collapse within the next couple of months. Now, we're seeing a lot of talk coming out of Israel, demanding that Syria eject Iranian forces and Hezbollah. And Sergei Lavrov has pointed out that just like Russia, the Iranian Republican Guards, the Iranian forces, and Hezbollah are in Syria with the permission of the Syrian government, something the United States does not have. And Syria is saying it's time for the U.S. to get on out. The U.S. is saying they're going to stay. And Syria is correctly saying that the U.S. presence in Syria, military presence, without the permission of the Syrian government, constitutes an act of aggression. So Netanyahu is now out there saying Israel will act alone to force Iran out of Syria. So now it looks like Israel is going to attack Syria. Syria will counterattack. Israel will say, help, help, we're being attacked by Syria just because we bombed them. How dare they do this? And the U.S. will come in on the side of Israel because they still want to conquer Syria. They don't want to give up. They don't want to be seen as having lost that war. Now, Israel is using U.S. tax dollars for many things, including the abuse of Palestinian children. And children and teenagers are frequent victims of Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories. They face physical abuse by Israeli military forces, and they're shuffled through this very unfair court system without access to legal counsel or even their families. And the United States has subsidized these abuses with billions of dollars in aid to Israel every year. Now there's a group of Democratic members of Congress are saying It's gone on long enough. Representative Betty McCollum, Democrat of Minnesota, and 9 co-sponsors on Tuesday introduced legislation that would require the U.S. State Department to certify every year that American military aid is not being used to fund the systematic abuse of Palestinian children. Of course, you know that AIPAC's going to come on out and scream, oh, you're a bunch of anti-Semites and you hate the Jewish people. But the fact is that there are already restrictions on the U.S. aid going to Israel, such as it not be used to fund offensive wars against other countries. But Israel ignores those restrictions, and the U.S. government just turns a blind eye. So this bill may actually be passed, but it won't actually accomplish anything. Now, apparently a group of French and European elected officials had planned to travel to Palestine to show solidarity with the Palestinian people. And Israel's interior ministry announced Monday that it was going to bar entry to these 7 officials. And apparently both the EU and France are saying, yeah, okay, that's fine, we'll go along with that, even though it is a major diplomatic faux pas. So anyway, a Lebanese newspaper has published an undated letter from Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeer to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman that puts forward a plan to normalize ties with Israel despite the risks of a public backlash. Now, as you know, these Muslim countries in the Middle East have never officially recognized the state of Israel because they see it as having been built on land stolen from Palestine. And they have indicated many times in the past that they're willing to recognize the state of Israel as once Israel recognizes the right of Palestine to exist. But Israel doesn't want to do that. Israel wants to be recognized, doesn't want to return the favor. But apparently there's consideration by Crown Prince bin Salman to actually set up official ties with Israel. And there will be a backlash. But apparently Saudi Arabia has decided that teaming up with Israel produces a coalition strong enough to go after Iran, Syria, and Lebanon. Now, Iran is already lambasting Saudi Arabia for asking Israel to attack Lebanon. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has lashed out at Saudi officials, saying that such moves are a shame for the Muslim world. And he basically came on out and said, what position do you think you Saudis are in? Why do you think you have a right to say a party should not be part of another country's government? Basically accused him of thinking that having a lot of money gives them a right to mess with other people's lives. Well, they probably got that idea from George Soros here. Meanwhile, over in Lebanon, President Michael Aoun said that basically nothing justifies the non-return of Prime Minister Hariri. He's been gone for 12 days, and therefore they're considering him a captive of the Saudi government. Now, remember Qatar? They kind of got lost in the shuffle there, and all of a sudden Qatar was friends with everybody, and then all of a sudden there was this planted news story. It turned out to be a hoax, but it angered all these other countries, and they basically cut off Qatar and said, you're on your own. Well, so many months further on down here, Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, in a speech to Qatar's upper house of parliament, said, you know, we're actually a lot better off without these former allies that turned against us. So that actually worked out very well to break free from all of that here. Now, over in Yemen, as you know, the Saudis basically imposed a complete blockade, air and sea, and the world shouted their condemnation over the humanitarian crisis that's going on in Yemen. So Saudi Arabia announced that they were going to remove the blockade of the port of Aden. Unfortunately, reports are coming out from the people who actually work at the port saying that ships are still not coming in. They're still being intercepted and interfered with somewhere along the way. And the aid is not getting in, and the starvation and famine and cholera are still going on inside Yemen. Now, here's an interesting little story. This is coming on out of Libya. You remember Libya and the consulate in Benghazi and that whole situation going on in and getting rid of Gaddafi because he was going to have a golden R and the rest of it. And it was a victory for private central banking and the petrodollar. But apparently, ever since Gaddafi was taken down, there is literally a slave industry operating inside Libya. They have, honest to goodness, slave auctions. They're operating in warehouses in various cities. And apparently some human beings are being sold for as little as $400 in supposedly U.S. liberated Libya. CNN actually got on in there and filmed a live auction in progress. So where is Hillary Clinton, the champion that cares about people? Because her actions in Libya created this climate where this rebirth of human slavery could take place. Now, the United Nations, which has already come on out with that bogus report saying that Assad gassed his own people, has now passed in the General Assembly a resolution condemning human rights violations by the Russian Federation in Crimea. And again, we're seeing this push toward trying to find some way to take Crimea back and weld it back onto Ukraine and weld all of that back onto the European Union. Now, apparently, one of the commanders of the Ukrainian army, a gentleman by the name of Litvin, in an interview with Apostrophe, said, once we clean Donbass, we will settle the question of Crimea. So already they're talking about an invasion. Now, according to Novorossiya, they're saying Ukrainian forces are already violating the ceasefire on numerous fronts in the Donbass. So it looks like that, along with everywhere else, is heating up again toward a conflict. This thing gets going, it's going to spin out of control. It's already spinning out of control. Ukraine is getting ready to terminate all diplomatic relations with Russia. That's another warning sign as to what's going on over there. And German Federal Intelligence Agency Chief Bruno Kahl is warning Western countries they should be ready to deter the Russian threat. I'm sorry, who's got their weapons on whose country's border? Got all these weapons, NATO, just parked right along the border with Russia. You don't see Russian weapons parked on the northern side of the border with Canada or the southern side of our border with Mexico. You don't see Russian warships tooling around the Gulf of Mexico. We know who the aggressor is. We know who the threat to world peace is, and it's not Russia and it's not Iran. But I guess they're trying to use the big lie technique. We're just going to say Russian threat, Russian threat, Russian threat until everybody says, oh, I guess it must be true. Too many people are saying it. Now, in response to the U.S. government citing a 1938 law to require Russia today to register as a foreign agent, Russia's State Duma passed their own bill saying that all mass media outfits operating inside Russia but funded from abroad must register as foreign agents, a little tit for tat that's going on there. But again, this idea of registering as a foreign agent, why only Russia? Why not Israel, which certainly has done a lot more meddling in our politics than Russia has done? AIPAC, for some reason, is not required to register as a foreign agent, even though it very clearly has a tremendous amount of influence over our government on behalf of a foreign government in Tel Aviv. In the end, it is these hypocrisies, these double standards, where the rules change from situation to situation that undermines the credibility of the government's propaganda.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.